Rod Soper, would love to hear a little bit more about yourself and how you came to open a school called Thinkers Inc.
Hey, Ash. Well, it's a bit of a good story, I think. About 15 years ago, I was working as a principal of a primary school. I'd been a teacher for about 17 years prior to that, just working in primary school and having a great time. And then I transitioned out of the classroom into the leadership role. And I think it was at that time that I really recognized that the needs of the children and the families were starting to shift a little bit, particularly, 35 years ago from when I started. They just were very different. Anyway, so I got myself into a bit of a research hole and realized that perhaps maybe we needed to do something a bit differently in primary school curriculum. So I thought, you know what? It's time to do something new. So I looked into starting my own school and what that would look like. In my research and as part of that journey, I realized that probably the bigger impact was going to be in the prior to school years. And that surprised me, particularly around that well-being piece that I become so passionate about. I think it certainly met the need that was being presented to me from the parents that were coming to my school, the conversations that I was having with teachers, observing children's behavior and how it was starting to shift. And I always wondered, as a kindy teacher, because that's where I spent most of my years when I was in primary school, was what is it? Why are these children coming into my classroom? And their first thing that they were saying is, "I can't do that." I'm like, "This place is set up for you to succeed. It's not a place to trick you up. It's like everything is just ready." But your first comment to me was, "I can't do that." And I think that was really the beginning of the journey for me. I was like, "Why? Why are they saying that?" Anyway, I then decided that I'd be a bit brave, and I left my role as principal, and I jumped in with both feet into starting Thinkers Inc., which is an early year school here in Sydney. And it is, I guess, basically the pillars or the foundation is all about well-being. How can we create this opportunity for these 3, 4, 5-year-olds to be able to look at life and go, "Yeah, I can do it." And it doesn't really matter whether it's something that is a little bit beyond their age and stage. They've just got this foundation that says, "I'm ready. I can have a go." And when I get stuck, and we know that they all do, we all do, still do. Is that they've got ways to resolve that, and they don't lose their sense of self, where they just become so unraveled. And this became my mantra, and it's been 10 years now that the earlier school has been running, and it's basically at the heart of my alumni as I meet them in the street and in shopping centres around the community. Their families, their parents are coming to me, and they're telling me, "Rod, we still remember how the importance of what self-regulation means. We still remember how significant gratitude changed our family's life. Thank you so much for helping us to understand that, we don't want to give up, and how can we sustain or be persistent?" And I guess that really became the heart and the key message of what Thinkers Inc. is really all about. And we continue to work on that and build on that. And of course, we know as teachers that family education piece is really important. So there's lots of communication, lots of, I guess, me inviting ourselves into families' lives and saying, "Here are some good things. Here are some interesting things. You've mentioned that your young person is struggling with this, or they're not able to, they get so dysregulated when you've got to drop them off, whether it's at school or whether it's in an early learning environment, doesn't seem to matter. They can't, they go from 0 to 100. What do I do? How do I manage this?" And it just sort of seems to be growing. And certainly my teacher friends and the people who I work with, they are saying that that's not going away. So that's really what started Thinkers Inc., and that's what I continue to try and work and research to try and understand best ways to help children and families manage and I guess grow through that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. And I've got so many questions about how do you open a school for a start? But also, I think one of the things that you mentioned there, like, is really heartwarming about those stories that you hear later on. Because I think particularly with young people, sometimes you don't know the impact that you're having at the time. Like,
Yes.
sometimes you can see it, but really you want it to be lasting impact. And that's when you know, when you hear those stories, like,
Yep.
years down the track. So that's amazing. And like, just going back to the school, like, I'm really interested to, I guess, find out the process. So you had the idea, I guess you had
Yep.
your own idea and philosophy in your mind about what type of school you wanted to open.
Correct.
So how do you actually open a school, like, or an early learning center? What's the process? I know we got lots of chains of early learning centers, but how does an individual actually start? Like, what's the number or top three steps, or the first three steps, for example?
I think the first one is it's really got to be something that you're super passionate about, because as soon as you dive into compliance, as we all know as teachers, compliance is massive. And I think now in Australia, it's going through the approved provider training, and making sure that you understand that and that you can demonstrate your knowledge and your capacity around that. Back when I started, I was able to use my education background, my leadership background to demonstrate my competency in that particular area. And then once you've got that tick of approval from the government, then you can start going down, finding a site, renovating it, making it a child safe space, and then basically setting up the law sets out a whole range of policies, procedures, compliance that you need to be able to check off on. You then do that. You then create your philosophical approach, and then from there it's basically creating it from a vision into a reality. Builders, planners, certifiers, all sorts of things that I never even knew I needed to know about. Food
Absolutely.
safety, all that sort of
Oh,
stuff.
absolutely.
And then it's a pretty straightforward process from there. It certainly has over the years become a lot more, I guess, the steps that you have to go along are very clear now, whereas I think when we first started they were there, but you just needed to make sure that you were pretty straight, you're able to work very strategically through all of those. But the government's made that very clear now for approved providers to be able to do that, and anybody can do it. But I think you've just got to be ready and willing to be brave and to not be bothered too much by compliance. And I think particularly in a private school setting, because the children are still classified under national law as vulnerable, then there are just some added things that primary schools, secondary schools don't need to consider because it's just simply because of their age and the need and their reliance on adults in their community and their world and things like that. So I think you've got to have a brave heart. You've got to be very passionate about it. You've got to really believe in what you're doing. And then just basically from there, it's sharing your dream, sharing your passion, sharing what you love, what you're being able to put your money where your mouth is, and then people catch that and they go, yeah, I want that for my child. And next thing you know, you've got young people hanging with you each day, learning, playing, exploring.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. I always find it mind-boggling. Oh, I started a school. How? Like, it's a great story. So, yeah, well done on that as well. Like, obviously, there's a lot of well, the compliance and just sticking with it and having that passion. And, yeah, it's amazing. And one thing I know you've also created is the Playing with Gratitude project, which I assume that you run in your at your Thinkers Inc. school. But also, I know that you partnered with particularly Fiona O'Donnell, who has a number of early learning centres across Australia. Now, I'll just give a shout out to Fiona because she actually connected us. Now, Fiona actually emailed a few weeks ago myself, and she had a photo of the Growing with Gratitude book, which she discovered in a bookstore in ACT, which is really cool, and I really appreciated her reaching out. And we jumped on a call, and she was sharing some fantastic work of what she's doing in her ELCs, and she spoke about the great work that she's been doing with playing with Project, which, sorry, playing with Gratitude Project, sorry. And that was developed by yourself, Rod. So how did freestyle, I guess it's a two-part question, how did the idea for playing with Gratitude Project come about, and I guess that then growing that into other ELCs as well, like with Fiona?
Yeah, great question. I was asked to speak at a conference in Queensland, which Fiona was attending, and it was the topic that I was given was how to future-proof our kids.
Hmm.
And I think one of the things that I was very, well, I still am very passionate about is that the jobs that our children who are currently in our schools, whether it's in a prior to school setting, whether it's primary school setting, the jobs that they will be finding when they're adults don't actually exist currently right now, and our workforce is changing so rapidly with new jobs and which ones will be disappear because of AI and all that discussion, those sorts of things. So that was the conference I was talking about, and one of the key things that I brought up in that particular presentation was this notion of gratitude and the influence of gratitude and how gratitude changes us psychologically, socially, and physiologically, and that it is such a powerful and yet incredibly simple thing that everybody can participate in and benefit from. And as a result of that keynote presentation, I was able to, I then met Fiona. She came up and she is just such an incredible person. And I think from that moment, we just connected and she said, you know what, with this knowledge, we can't sit on it. We need to share this information. So Fiona and I, we got together and we sat down and we she shared her vision, her dreams, what she was doing, where she was working. And you know what? She has the biggest heart to see children thrive and flourish. Everything that comes out of that incredible woman's mouth is just so inspiring around kindness and wanting to see children thrive and flourish. And I think that really captured my spirit of what Thinkers Inc. was about. So together we came up with this concept of sharing gratitude, and it then turned into Playing with Gratitude Project. And it was really we called it that because of the two key pieces. One was play, which is obviously such a big part of the prior to school setting. We know that in primary school, applied learning is becoming more and more important, and teachers are starting to really embody that in the classroom. But it's so similar to what we would define and understand play as. And then, of course, this work of gratitude. At the same time as that had occurred, I'd had actually been to a conference myself where I was listening to Michael Carr Gregg, who I'm sure you know about his amazing work. And he said to, in this particular presentation, he said, traditionally, the biggest threat to our teenagers' life was substance abuse, but that is now changing, and it's now their mental health and the impact of that. And the statistics that he provided just absolutely just blew me away. When I was a kindy teacher, knowing that substance abuse was big for teenagers to have to deal with, but I didn't really feel like it was my responsibility. I was dealing with 5-year-olds, right? 6-year-olds. But when he talked about this incredible changing need, I was like, I'm living and breathing this in my workplace. My friends are living and breathing this in their workplace. The mental health of our young people is changing. It's and why is it changing already at 5? And that was really, I guess, what birthed bringing this notion of play together with gratitude. Play, if you do a bit of a quick deep dive into it, we can understand that, if you like the opposite of play, a lot of people say it's work. But in actual fact, the incredible work of Dr. Stuart Brown, he's a psychiatrist and an MD from the States. He leads up the Play Institute. His work says it's actually depression. The opposite of play is depression. So a life without play is one that is significantly diminished, and it incredibly impacting our mental health. And his work says that it's plays not just for the early years, although its first 2,000 days is transformational for a person's lifespan. But he also said, don't forget to play as adults. And I was like, oh my gosh, we have to keep playing, but I haven't got time for play or play kids stuff. And I'm just like, well, but hang on a second. Let's stop and look at what play actually does to you as an adult, as a person. So we were looking at that and how play, these elements are going to be the foundation for our young people's lives in a, this in our new context, or my new context, but Fiona's context in private school, and then understanding the work of gratitude, changing things like anxiety, isolation, changing their immunity systems, helping them to stay connected, to be happier, to be more resilient. To I mean, the gratitude is, and it just works, right? It d doesn't care how old you are, it doesn't mind where you're from, doesn't it doesn't pick and choose. It just does its work, and it changes us. So not only from a oh my gosh, molecular level, but also right through to the way I'm connecting with my folks, with my besties, with the people I'm playing sports with. But we just saw that that was such a simple action that we could then bring into this private school setting with people, young people, who are in the first stages of life. And we know that the first 1,000 days is about learning about, those key domains, our physical, communication, social, emotional. And then the next 1,000 days are around mastering all of that. And then, when we get to seven, it turns into that next brain burst where the critical period of brain development occurs. So being able to put these two components of play and gratitude together, Fiona and I were like, we just need to do that. And it just seemed like a natural fit because, as I said, in private school settings, idiots really plays our methodology of connecting with children. There's so much research around what the influence of what it does. But when we felt that we were able to go and share that with her teams, and share that with her children, and share that with her families, what a difference. And of course, like you said, we use the same principles at Thingus Inc., and it's just phenomenal to watch. And it changed how children saw each other. It changed how families connected. It changed how children used the environment. It changed how parents connected with each other because of what their children were asking. Now, one of my most favorite stories is from one of Fiona's centers in Canberra, and a dad picked up his young daughter. I think she was sort of like 3.5, 4, and he picked her up, and she went said to her dad, "What are you grateful for, Dad?" And he was a little bit like, oh, I'm taken back by this very, abstract question. Anyway, while he was, trying to gather his thoughts, she goes, "Well, you should be grateful for this, this, and this." And he actually then, reported back that that was it. She was bang on. And of course, she pulled the same trick when Mum got home. And the dad then came into Fiona's service the next day and shared this story with the director. And she then shared it with me, but it was amazing how they were able to reconnect as a family just because of that one question that their daughter asked, that they didn't even, and he even said to the director, "I didn't even think my daughter could, apart from either understand this concept," but then the fact that she was able to correctly identify the things that I should be or could be grateful for, he goes, it just revolutionized my perception of my daughter, which, again, from a teacher's perspective, we're like, yes, cheering, that's fantastic. But at the same time, it changed their family, and they, their reflection on going through this project with Fiona Centres was for that one family. And there's many others that, but it was
That's
just
brilliant.
tremendous. And so Fiona has consequently, throughout her organization, has filtered this out, and then it's gathered momentum over the last 7 years, where it's then the focus is growing from gratitude. It's then birthing empathy and new ways of understanding kindness, and creating opportunities where children and their families, and of course Fiona's team, are a growing and experiencing wellness in unexpected ways.
Unbelievable. And I love that. And again, it's great to hear those stories because that's when you know that you're making like that difference, isn't it, from those
Yes.
things. And mate, with we're really interested to know, like with the play like with gratitude concept, like is that, for example, like say for a child is playing in a sandpit, are they the teachers then equipped with the language that they can use while they're playing, or is it more a play-based approach where they're playing games that have been designed to practice, say, gratitude?
Yeah, absolutely both. I think one of the things that we discovered, and I think I discovered it as, and Fiona and I, we talked a lot about this, that when it comes to these mental health practices or well-being practices, let's call them that, I think adults need to understand and experience the authenticity for themselves, because otherwise it then becomes, I'm just delivering some content. And I may not necessarily have my heart in it. I remember teaching subtraction with trading to my year four class, and I never really had much heart in that. We did it. We had a bit of fun with it. But you were just teaching the concept. Once they got the concept, they were able to move on and build with it and that sort of stuff. So what we really did in the project, we made sure that the very initial stages of it was a wellness program for just the team, and they just practiced it first. And I think what was remarkable was as the team started to recognize the shift in themselves, then it naturally then became that expression that they wanted to share that with the children. So it, of course, then became intentional. So let's create an opportunity where we can talk to the children about what this word means, what it could look like practically. One of the fun ways that we used to do it was through a gratitude huddle, we'd call it, and we'd sit together and we'd talk about some of the things that we're grateful for. Now, 4 and 5 year olds, they've got good language, right? So, but it always started, always, and it always starts in the same way. So, what are you grateful for? Mum. Next person says mum. Next person says mum. Next person says mum. And now we're always grateful for our mums, right? And then as the days go by, then it's mum, dad, my friend, grandma, grandpa, and then all of a sudden, and it's happened in all of the organisations that are participating in it, whether they're businesses or schools. Is it shifts? I'm grateful for my mum because of the way she hugs me. And it's that, and I just think of it, it's the mantra is to look for it and then to take it in and just sort of let it wash over you. And that's what starts to happen. And so then to answer your question, then it becomes them just playing their own inspired play games, whether it's in a mud kitchen or a sandpit, whether it's in the dress ups at the home corner, whether they're doing some craft or whatever it is, then it naturally starts to come out. Thank you so much for doing that. I'm really, or alternatively as well, actually, you've just emptied my bucket. And because there's a great book, Have You Filled a Bucket Today, which I'm sure you know about, and that way of talking about gratitude, and then the children respond, I'm sorry, let me fill your bucket again. And it's not with sand or objects, it's actually with acts of kindness. So and then of course we have the games that we create where gratitude then can be is the heart of the game. The social stories is a big thing prior to school settings where we talk and we imagine, we play, we talk about how different social scenarios might go, things like that. Yeah.
Interesting. And I know what you mean. Like, it's very common, like, even for adults, like, oh, what are you grateful for today? Like, family, food, water, like shelter.
Yep.
But what, because that was like when I first started out as well, that was the common responses from like students. And I thought, how can we get them to think a bit more outside the square than just the obviously, yes, they're great to be grateful for, but get them to, like, I guess, widen their thinking about all the unbelievable things around us that we can be grateful for. So what I used to do was like ask specific questions rather than just general, what are you grateful for? Who is a person in your life that you're grateful for? Or it could be, have a look around the classroom. What is something you can see right now that you're grateful for and why you're grateful for that. So more specific questions, I reckon that's a good way to open up the students' thinking
100%.
as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, really interesting point you said that, because I think a lot of teachers do find that, like, and it's sometimes it's hard to break that. Not, as I say, like, I've got to highlight the fact that they're very important, like family, and
Yes.
but just to get them to think outside those things, because everywhere around, and this is what I've learned, like, there's so much around us that we can be grateful for. Like, just walking down the street, like, you can see so
Yeah.
many things, like having a bin on the side of the road where we can put rubbish, like, just stuff like that. Like,
Right.
when I was young, I didn't really think of it too much, but now I've like been practicing for a long time and just become so aware of all these things. And I think
Yeah.
it's really, but starting at such a young age is so important. And these young student or young people are going to grow up being able to do that, like really
Yeah.
see the things around them. And I love the fact that, like, the stat about, oh, like 1 in 4 trillion or whatever it is that we actually get a chance to be a human. Like, how lucky are we? Like, we actually have an opportunity. And I think that's another thing that we can teach young people. Like, and I'm actually doing a year 11 talk next week. And we're recording this on the, what is it, 23rd?
Yep.
23rd? 23rd of January. And next week I'm doing year 11 talk. And one of the hot, like, points is that, like, it's your own journey, but we've got so much to be grateful for along that journey. And for a start, having like a chance to be a human is 1 in 4 trillion or something. Just even thinking about that is unbelievable. Anyway, it's a bit of a side
Yeah.
note.
And I think it's I love what you had you've got on your website about the fact that it real gratitude does sit in the positive psychology mindset. And I think one of the things that people often struggle with is that why I've got nothing to be grateful for. You know, my life is from my perspective, and our perspectives are our truth, right? So my life sucks. Nothing is good. I don't like who I'm with. I don't like where I live. I don't like the fact that I've been told I have to do this and I don't want to do it. So then we get caught up in this, I guess, this vortex of negative thinking. And the thing is that the one thing I love about gratitude is not saying stop thinking about that. It's just saying, hang on a second, pause for 1 second. And in amongst all of this, unhappiness, what is one thing? And I remember the first time I even started thinking about it in a more serious way. I was at a time in my life where some things that were quite significant for me, and life was not great. And when I thought, oh, God, okay, what am I going to be grateful for? The first three things I came up with was my pillow, my bed, and that I had hot water in the shower. That was it, because everything else really was just rubbish. And then but then the fact that you do it over time, and but those three things were incredibly valuable, incredibly valid. And now, as I look back at my journals, I look at some of the stuff that I've written, and I've gone, oh my gosh, that just seems so trivial. But right then, in that moment, that was the best I could do.
100%.
And I did have a job. I had a home. I had people around me love me. But where I was sitting from a psychological perspective, I still went to pillow, hot water.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's really important to highlight the fact these are so important. I like to call them like the things we take for granted, because they're always there and we stop to forget. Sorry, we stop sometimes and just think about how lucky we are to have those things. So, like, a bit of a side note, I like to think about gratitude in four areas of life. People in our life we can be grateful for, the experiences that we have, the opportunities that we get, and also those things that we might take for granted sometimes. And that crosses over with people. But it's those real basic things. And I mean, we want people to appreciate those things as well, but also widen, like, I guess, the vision further about the different things. But I think it's important just to stop and remember how lucky we are, because, as you say, I think they're the ones we need to come back to when we are having a bit of a bad time. And I was saying to you, like, oh, a dozen years ago, I reckon I had a probably bit of a rough year, and I remember, like, laying in bed on a Sunday, and I couldn't go to school because I was teaching at the time, and I went to the doctor, and I knew that things weren't right, so he gave me a week off, and yeah, just got myself right. I just started to really lower the bar and just think about the things that I sometimes may take for granted, because they are the things I'm really grateful for at the time, because it was hard to, as you said, find other things to be grateful for. So it definitely goes through, like, cycles, and it's in. and particularly young people, like we don't know their backgrounds. Like they might have a really tough situation at home and they're not grateful for their parents, but they can be grateful, say, for their teacher for supporting them, whoever it is. So it's a bit of a tricky one sometimes, but I think it's, I mean, it doesn't matter. There's always something to be grateful for. There is always.
Absolutely.
And
And
that's
I
a
think when the it's not judgment, but when we become judgy in our perspectives and we just let that go, and it doesn't matter how simple it is, but we just remember, okay, over the next 21 days or whatever it is, I'm going to just every day, I'm just going to find three things that that are going to that I'm grateful for. And it might be in amongst, yeah, as you said, having a horrible time with my folks, but I'm grateful for my friends that they're there to support me. And just that one, that just that little shift, it then it's gratitude starts to do its work. And I think that's the thing that even in our very youngest children in private school settings, which could be prior to one, for instance, so birth to one, the teachers didn't really know how to express that with them. So we'd said to them, well, let's make sure we are explicit in telling these very, very the youngest people of our community what we're grateful for and tell them why. And one of the things that we were observing over the period of 6 months that we were doing our research was that children were settling, who weren't settling very well, then started to. They were gravitating to particular teachers in ways that were quite unique because they were the ones that were explicitly sharing the words of thanks and gratitude, appreciation, kindness, and they were doing it explicitly. And it was actually creating these bonds of attachment in ways that the staff had been trying to, and yet they weren't successful. But the work of gratitude did it. And I think this is the incredible power across the lifespan. It doesn't matter how old you are, gratitude is going to get in there, and it is going to make a difference for us. And it's just, there's nothing better than having a student who I hadn't seen since they were four turn up at your workplace and knock on the door and say, "Do you remember me?" And I go, "I remember your eyes." And then they tell you who they are, and then they tell you about the voice, it's your voice in their head in their time of trouble, and you think, oh my gosh, that's just such a wonderful story. But it's this, when we embed ourselves and our teaching in this work of gratitude, then that's the voice that's there in the dark place.
Absolutely. And actually, Rod, just on, you mentioned some research just then that you've done, and I know that you've shared it across the, I think, international conferences as well. Is that correct? Yeah. So what are some of the key findings that you've, well, first of all, maybe what was the research project, I guess, what you were trying to find out, like the I guess the hypothesis, if you like. Did I say hypothesis? and maybe some key findings as well.
I think the hypothesis came from the Playing with Gratitude project. So I guess the question was, would play and gratitude, when integrated in or embedded into an early or prior to school setting, would it make any observable difference in children's well-being and their mental health? So what we used was the practitioner inquiry approach, or it's also known as action research. And it's often a research methodology that education and educationalists use, because it's about, you observe a particular concern or a problem that needs to be, you feel like it needs to be addressed. Then you do some research, not only of your environment, what you're seeing, your observables, not the stuff that you can make up, but the actual stuff that you see, hear, the action that's being taken. But then while that's going on, you look and you do some research. So we were looking at Dr. David Whitbread's research around play. We're looking at Dr. Stuart Brown's research around play. We're looking at Robert Emmons' work on gratitude. We were reading Dr. Brené Brown's work on being enough and gratitude and persistence. We were looking at Carol Dweck's work on the fixed, growth mindset. And we were bringing all of these pieces together to try and understand what is it as humans that we need to set us up for a life of well-being, success as best as possible. And we were looking at psychologists and psychiatrists, some of that research, educational psychologists work. And what we then came up with was that so much of these supported those two big principles that we're looking at was play and the research that sits behind play, and then obviously the research that sits behind gratitude. So we needed to narrow it down, which is why we ended up landing with gratitude and play as our 2 points. And so through the action research, we just used the well-being scale, which had been put together by the South Australian government when 2009 through the Reflect Relate. There's another R word, but I can't remember it. Resource that they had provided when the Regional Early Years Learning Framework came out by the federal government. And we used that as our point of measure. And so what we then did is we used the staff's observations, their natural observations through their own assessment and documentation methodologies. We used the wellbeing scale to track teachers' change and growth over a period of time, which the initial period was 6 months. And then we also used that same scale to understand observable change in children, and that same scale for parents to rate observable change in their children. And we then collated all of that data. And I think the one thing that came out of it was, particularly for that 0 to 2 age group, the really big findings was that the children were no language at that stage, or very simple language. The children were physically, spontaneously responding differently to their parents and to their early childhood teachers, as this explicit gratitude was filling their environment, filling their building and developing neural networks. So they were obviously changing cognitively. The social emotional domain was obviously clearly being impacted, and they were then responding in differently to their environment, their own learning environments. I think the other big thing that was incredible that came out of it was staff morale and their team connectedness. A number of them, it was all anonymous, the data that was collected. And a number of them had said that probably the saving grace for some of the team-related, workplace-related issues that we often have to, navigate, was the work of gratitude, that they, because of the gratitude that was they were practicing personally, but collectively as a team and as teachers with children, that they were better equipped using their language to deal with these negative situations because they felt more capable and in a safer environment. The other big thing was families were reporting a change of their family life. We'd given quite a range of fun activities that families could do with their in family time, that where they could practice it, but also observe it from their early learning environments. And they were reporting the significant changes where, like, families were coming together. Couples who were thinking of separating were not because of their child's language about being grateful. Families from lower socioeconomic environments were saying, "My children never slept, but now they are, because we sit together before they go to bed every night now, and we talk about what we're all grateful for," things like that. So I think families were talking and giving these real life testimonials, stories of how their families were changing because of that. The way children were connecting with each other, the language of care, concern, kindness, empathy was exponentially different. And it was all based on what we observed. So the rule was if you can't see it, it can't be recorded. We're not making this up. So, then we were, always asking for examples and scenarios, but they just kept coming in. They just were, the data was being flooded with these changes. So I think that was from the gratitude side, but I think it was wonderful for the teachers to be able to start to realize how important their role in facilitating and guiding play became for what was happening in the sort of that mental health space for their children. So I don't think they knew about it. Certainly nobody, as it when my teacher training, no one told me anything
Yeah,
about
absolutely.
why should I use play in my pedagogy? No one ever. So it's I went back to the University of Sydney where I did my training, and I sat with my dean, who and I asked her the question, what's the importance of play across the lifespan? And she couldn't tell me. So I said, here's some reading for you.
Interesting.
But why don't teachers know that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Mate, one thing, I just got one more question. You mentioned 0 to 2, obviously those first, well, that's probably just under 1,000 days, really.
Yes.
How do you actually, because obviously at that age, every now and then you'll hear a noise out of like a child rather than actual words. I guess they're starting to form a bit of a vocab, but how do you actually, I guess, plant that seed and help them, or what opportunities can you give them to practice gratitude at that age? What sort of activities or ideas from 0 to 2?
Great question. It's exactly the same as you do with everything else. So, we my the best example I can give, my most favorite, is you've got 18 months, and they've mastered the crawl and they're about to start the walk. And you're all this family afternoon, you're sitting around, and the young person gets up a bit wobbly on the coffee table, and everybody's like, yeah, come on, you take those first steps, you can do it, right? And everybody is just cheering that young person on, right? They are just everybody's for them. And of course then there'll be someone, their arms out, come on, you can do it, come on, you can do it. And what that child is doing is that they are in the safest place in that moment, where it wouldn't matter what happened next. They were being loved up. But that child is modeling everything that they have seen from their parents. Their parents are getting up, they're walking around. Every single day they're seeing their parents using their legs. And as young people develop, as well, young humans develop, and their neural pathways develop, because they're wired obviously to grow in that particular way, they start to understand their body, and they then start to use it. And that's when the crawling starts to happen and the walking. So they are then putting into practice what they have had modeled for them every day. And then, of course, the child takes that step, and there's full party mode, and the child's so full of their own, like, yes, I'm a champ, world champion. And they get wobbly and they fall over. But they don't stop, do they? They get up and they have another go, and everyone's going, yes, and there's videos galore, and we're sending them to everybody who wasn't there. And that child feels that saturation of knowing that they're loved first and foremost, but that they have put into practice all the things that they've seen. And so I feel that gratitude is exactly the same, and that's what the teachers of the 0 to 2 do, just demonstrated. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate you. I appreciate the fact that while I'm trying to get your lunch ready, you're playing quietly there, or you're singing along, or you're waiting so beautifully. It's this constant language. It's telling them and sharing. Don't keep it hidden. Tell them what you're grateful for. Tell them why you're grateful for them. Even just the fact that they when they then those neurons that start to mirror when primary carer number 1 and 2 are eyeballing the child, and the child's giggling and smiling. It's that serve and return, as it's called. That's those that new neural pathways that are being established, and those neural networks that are being firmed up. It's the same thing. And if parents and teachers can do that every day, all the time, don't keep it hidden, then actually it's laying those foundations. And the data speaks for itself. Or if you like, the children speak for themselves through their behavior. They may not have the words that we can comprehend the way you and I do, but they have their simple the sounds that they make, the eyes, the how relaxed their bodies are, all those sorts of things. You know that it's at work, and so I think that's the sort of thing. And I mean, it doesn't really change. All we do is we just add words to it. My partner comes home and the door slams, and I'm like, okay, ready. What am I gonna get? Versus my partner comes home and the door closes quietly, and you're like, oh wow, no, I haven't even seen them. You already know that. So I think that modeling is just, and so just do it, just do it,
Absolutely. That makes sense. And I think it's a good word that you use, don't hide it, like just let it out, because you're gonna get like there's zero to two, like you're gonna get a blank look on your face.
Yep.
Don't let it put you off.
Well, exactly. And I think the fact is that the blank look, think of it as a blank check. This is where you are filling in the numbers, and how many zeros, because every interaction that you have with them, absolutely without a shadow of doubt, is cataloged. That is data that's been received. And, sometimes you'll get the lovely response that's physical that we can then track and measure, or we feel like we can track and measure. But we know that we know that we know that every bit that we can connect and communicate with young children is incredibly important. And let's face it, even as adults, what's the most important, one of the most important pieces of our well-being is how we communicate, how we connect, so it doesn't surprise me that that is the same from, 1 month to 45 in 1 month.
So true. And mate, Rod, love the insights. Really appreciate the time, mate. And where can people find you? Whether that's LinkedIn or websites, email, where's the best places?
Definitely can find me on LinkedIn. And then there's also the Playing with Gratitude website that they're keen to have a look at that, particularly at the projects, not just for early learning, it's also for schools as well. So anybody that's listening that would like to use this action research, if they'd like to do a bit of research in their school, that's there. So yeah, that both of those sites are available. I've also written a book called The Great Gratitude Surprise, which is part of the outworking of the Playing with Gratitude project. That's a story that one of the services in Charleville in central Queensland came up with, and we adapted it into a book. So they can also Google that and check that out as well.
Brilliant, mate. We'll put those links in the show notes for everyone to have a look at. And Rod, I really appreciate the time, mate, and thanks for sharing the stories and the insights.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.